Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, look, guys need a little chance to get out there and practice and get some live reps. The thing that I never liked about preseason wasn't that there were four games of it. It's that the games were rendered disposable by who played in them by the league itself. You're basically telling me you don't need to, yet you're still charging full price for games. It's just the price of the ticket to preseason football that pissed me off. Not the snaps, not the reps, not the chance to practice and get out there and play. It's the pricing. And man, the pricing is part of an early story we're going to get into today. Our first two stories are fascinating here, gentlemen. We have two stories from the world of soccer to begin today's show with, and that's something I don't say very often. Today, the news is that the MLS bubble has been infiltrated by COVID-19. FC Dallas, which is obviously coming into an Orlando bubble from a hot spot itself, tested all the players in Dallas, got on an airplane, flew to Orlando, got into the bubble. Right away in the bubble, two players test positive, followed by four more positive tests after they had thought, hey, we're coming in clean as a whistle. This really isn't a soccer story to me as much as it is a harbinger of bad things to come for the NBA, which we all know wants to share the same bubbling ideas. We got some hockey bubbling ideas a little bit later on, some hub cities to talk about, but that's kind of a doozy right from MLS right off the bat here, fellas.
Yeah, and there's no evidence that they were any less careful about this than the NBA says it's going to be. They largely took the same protocols, and still positives got in. And I think, you know, every day in every way, the NBA idea, as well-meaning as it might be, is just getting undercut a little more and a little more. And there's going to be a day, and it's not going to be like a catastrophic day where three full teams get it. But it's just going to be like this slow erosion of confidence to the point where Adam Silver is going to have to look at the owners and say, I don't think I can destroy your investments this way.
Man, you might be right. I mean, it's easy to accuse you, Ray, of being negative, but I just think you're looking at this through a critical lens, and expecting the worst is the healthiest way, I think, to go into this situation. It's what I would want if I were a player. It's what I would want if I were an agent. It's what I'd want if I were a family member of said player. I would want you to think the worst could happen at all times, so stay vigilant. Zachary Binney, who is a PhD on Twitter, you know, instantly says, what lessons should the NBA take away from this outbreak? Obviously, testing often before teams even leave for Orlando. If the idea was to test getting to Orlando, you need to double down on that right now. And what could be a negative test or a result in the AM could obviously change by PM. So how often do you then test? That's also something that the NBA needs to reconsider. Again, this is a trial balloon sent up by Major League Soccer. The lessons from this trial balloon, I'm sure, are being taken in earnest by the NBA. Man, if this is a tough trial balloon to send up, what is baseball supposed to do with 30 different cities traveling frequently to 30 different cities? It's like a roulette wheel. You're spinning everyone way too often, far too often. That is what I'm worried about. I'll give the NBA's bubble a shot. I'm almost ready to declare baseball's idea dead on arrival. That thing just doesn't feel like it's going to work at all.
No, well, they, you know, and already, well, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say, look, it's as discouraging as it is to see six individuals from one team test positive. I'm looking at it different from Ray, but I was kind of assuming the number would be significantly higher. Now, I'm not saying, oh, this is a great news, because it's not great news. But I think it's a work in progress. I think you're going to see things hopefully tighten up. And I don't know what the acceptable number is. And now, the one thing that I have a question with baseball, and Ray, I'd love to hear your opinion on this one, is, you know, with the travel situation being what it is, where you see Governor Cuomo basically say, hey, here's a list of states that we don't really want people flying into or from into our state. How does that affect baseball? How does that affect some of these other sports that like golf is doing right now, where they are a traveling circus? My bigger question is, how does that affect just the logistics of what they're trying to
now? Well, Toronto, basically the premier of Ontario is already looking the other way, trying to get Toronto, the Blue Jays in and out of Canada easily, and teams in and out of the U.S. easily. So they're either going to ignore their own protocols, or they're going to have to shut this down. I mean, if there are that many teams that frankly can't go into New York, I mean, it's not going to affect, Georgia, it's going to affect Florida. It's going to, you know, I don't know what Washington, D.C.'s rules are right now, and I should know that. But, you know, those are the two places that affect New York. They're not affected by Texas or Arizona or California, because none of those teams will be going that far. But it's an indication that if San Francisco, if California's numbers are continuing to go up to the point where, Gavin Newsom came out today and basically said, well, there are 16 counties that are not going to be able to do things they were doing a week ago. Okay, now you've taken out, you know, five teams in California. Mm-hmm. You've taken out one in Arizona. You've taken out two in Texas, if that becomes it. You know, it's New York is just a harbinger of what's coming, unless all these states get their numbers dramatically better in a very quick hurry. And the evidence is that nobody's getting their numbers better in any kind of hurry. So I think it's all sort of undoing itself one step at a time. It's not going to be, like I said, it's not going to be the one huge moment where, oh my God, LeBron got it or Mike Trout got it. It's going to be a series of little things which makes it undoable in the long run.
I want to say you're right, but I think you're completely wrong. It's going to take a body. There's not I don't think there is going to be an amount of little things that you can stack high enough to get anyone's attention. It might take bodies. And, you know, the one thing that sports has going for it right now are two undeniable facts. The mortality rate of COVID-19, while testing skyrockets, is falling dramatically in the United States. This is good news and shouldn't be treated as anything other than good news. Fewer people are dying as more people test positive. That feels like good news to me. The second thing is this, and I've done a little bit of research. If anyone would like to check this and get back to us, use the text line. Ray, I know you like policing the show as much as anybody. How many professional athletes worldwide have died of COVID-19? What is the death toll of professional worldwide athletes who have not lived, already dead, COVID-19? I believe the number is zero.
I think the number is zero, too, but I don't think it's a death toll that's going to make this happen. I think it's going to be players going, you know what? There are a lot of people testing positive. I'm not playing.
Oh, if you got enough people in mutiny. Right, if there's a mutiny, yeah. Ray, that would stop.
No, that's how I. But see, I. That's how I see this happening. I mean, but I. Because I can. I don't want to say I can guarantee you, because I don't think anybody can guarantee anything. But if LeBron James came down with this, a lot of players would go, "Yeah, we're out," because LeBron James matters to the other players in that league. If Giannis got it, I think they'd go, wait a minute, what am I doing this for? Because the lure of a championship is a lot less, A, when the other best players aren't there, and B, when it looks like the strongest of them can get it, no matter how much care is taken. I think every sport is different, but I think baseball is one where you could get a lot of guys going, I'm not playing. Now you guys figure out how to play.
We're checking out the Butcher Boys internet connection. Hopefully it's a little bit better as we move on through the show today. I know he's already dropped once or twice. C'est la vie, so is life. I told you it was a rough 2020. So Butcher Boy coming back in just a moment or two, as will we with Marcus Semien of the Oakland A's. He is right around the corner. We have more to talk about. Again, I told you we had two stories from the world of soccer. We've only gotten to one. The second one, and it's weird, the first story about soccer immediately pivots to the NBA. The second soccer story immediately pivots to youth sports and the cost in America, which is something that we were talking about yesterday. It's something I think we should talk about. Marcus Semien, who is obviously preparing for a huge major league season. He hopes that he can follow up where he, if he can pick up right where he left off. The guy was an MVP candidate last year. Semien raked. We're going to talk to him about the season he had, the upcoming year around the corner as well. Doug Glanville today, a What If Wednesday, and we're just underway. What if I told you the internet would work better for Joe Shasky before the end of the show? That'd be great. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with the Butcher Boy in this afternoon, if the internet will let him, here on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I told you we were going to start with two soccer stories which related to the other sports around us today. We've already had one. We're going to get to the second one in just a second. Marcus Semien is joining us at 2:30, shortstop of the Oakland A's. We're looking forward to that conversation. But the breaking news kind of around this hour is that the NFL has indeed canceled two preseason games, wiping clear weeks one and weeks four of the original preseason plan. Every team will get a home game. Every team will get an away game. Teams that travel will depart on the day of games, on the day before games. And I've even seen some NFL circles talk about how teams might be traveling to and from cities in the regular season day of to avoid overnight hotel stays. And I'm sure that the union will be all up in arms about, you know, recovery or table treatment, that sort of stuff. So that's going to be a moving piece of the puzzle. And, oh, if you're HBO, how happy are you? Hard Knocks. You're going to get 4 weeks and 2 weeks. You definitely don't have games. I guess you're going to be covering SoFi Stadium closely, which, by the way, the biggest scoreboard in existence was raised to the roof of SoFi Stadium today. Have you seen this thing? It is 100 yards long. It's the size of a field, and it's a circle. You can see the inside and outside of it. It's spectacular. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You didn't think you'd ever see a scoreboard like this. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with Matt Kolsky out today. The Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky, is in. Joe, do you see that scoreboard go up? You see that video at all? That thing is going to be, look, say what you want about the Rams and football and Los Angeles and whether it works or not, or the Chargers. That place looks like it's going to be sick.
Well, and this goes back to the 49ers kind of botched the whole design of Levi Stadium. I mean, right now they're sitting and they've got the third best stadium in their own division. And the second that this thing opens, they'll have their fourth best stadium when the LA one is open. So it's just, I mean, what? Again, I go back to the Niners. What's the accentuating feature? What's the highlight of Levi Stadium? The fact that it looks unfinished?
It's got to be the location of downtown San Francisco. That's what I rave about every time I'm there.
Proximity!
Here's the highlight. The Athletic had a really good article today about spreads in the media section of NFL games, and Levi's did get a very nice grade of pregame, postgame meal. Guess who came in number one? Tampa apparently puts out the NFL spread of spreads. I had no idea. Ray, did your Capital J journalism background lead you to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as being the NFL's halftime culinary leader?
It did not. And I'm going to guess that based on the health concerns that we're currently dealing with, that Tampa will not be number one next year.
You might be right about that. And let's face it, you don't have to put out a smorgasbord if you got three people wearing, you know, hazmat suits covering the game. Second story from soccer as it relates to something that we were talking about yesterday, and this is perfectly timed for Joe Shasky showing up on the air with us because he is very involved in local youth sports. He coaches, he's got family members participating, and you're, you know, several more years down the road with a couple of nephews, Joe, than I am with my own son. I haven't really experienced San Francisco Rec League anything. You being a son of the city, you came up playing in it. You're now giving back, and that's fantastic. Zlatan? What, Ray, help me with this guy's name.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Okay, yeah, the guy who basically came to the L.A. Galaxy, took out a full-page ad in the L.A. Times and said, your sport sucks, I'm here to save it, you're welcome. That guy. He's kind of awesome, right? He basically was just quoted in GQ Italia, and he said, quote, sports in the United States are too expensive. My children played in a good team, and I paid $3,500 each per child. I don't like that because not everyone has the money, and sports should be for everyone. There you go. I mean, one of the more arrogant, wealthy athletes in the world who has seen sports globally, different continents, walks away from America's youth sports culture going, damn, that's expensive. Why the hell are you doing it like that? That, to me, says a mouthful.
Yeah, you know, one of the things here that's really – it's just – this is the reality of where we're at. We've cut funding to all of these local parks. When I was growing up in San Francisco, I came for the East Bay, the North Bay, or the South Bay. But in the city itself, if you lived in the neighborhood, you just went to the park and there were gym directors. The gym was open. You could sign up for any sport that you wanted to play. And the city, the park and rec system, was the one that funded all of these teams. And so, you know, I played for St. Mary's Park. Some kids played for Upper Noe or Day Street, or they played for Sunset or West Sunset. And you knew all the different places throughout the city because that's the park that you played for. Nowadays, Damon, and yeah, exactly. Nowadays, though, Damon, it's everything's a travel team. Everything's a money grab. And are there free programs out there? Yeah, there are. You got to jump through hula hoops to find them. But the problem is everything is you want your child to stay on the same track as some of the other ones around them or their contemporaries, their peers in school. And if they're not doing individual lessons, which cost a fortune, if they're not playing on five different travel teams, depending on how many playing, they're falling behind competition wise because that's where all the best players are playing now. And it's all a money grab to me. And there are programs that aren't, but it's really disheartening because the way we came up was you just played with all the kids who grew up in the neighborhood with you.
Well, it's haves and it's have nots. And I want to go back, Ray, to what Ian Desmond was saying yesterday, where he wasn't just taking a flamethrower to Major League Baseball, but he was looking at how it systemically priced black kids out of even getting involved in the sport at the beginning of their life, and that's why you got 8% participation in the damn dugout.
They priced out poor kids, which is even, I mean, that takes in a lot of Hispanics. I mean, it basically what it says is your kid's ability to recreate is entirely dependent on your tax return. And whether it's because the cities didn't want to take on the liability of continuing to run those park leagues, or whether they didn't want to keep the parks kept up with the gardener who worked there every day, you know, either way, it turned out to be sort of a double whammy in which the city got out of the business of covering kids' recreation as a part of running a city that's going to be healthy and
yes,
healthy, and then turned it over to people who wanted to turn it into a profit center. And it's the thing that, frankly, that Ian Desmond was talking about, but he didn't have to be the only one to talk about it. This has been an ongoing problem for a long time now. And Jason Davis, who does a show on Sirius called The United States of Soccer, has been railing about this for years. It's not about anything other than, are your parents loaded? That's not the purpose of sport. And if it is the purpose of sport, why don't you just recruit the parents and take their money and don't even bother with the kid? Cut the kid.
Well,
children is paid to get money for parents. And that's not sport. That's, you know, that's taking advantage of people.
Well, right. And even if you just say, like, okay, not everyone's going to play high school sports. Not everyone's going to even go from high school and play college. Like, we're talking about the 1% of the 1%. More than anything, it's a play out that's a safe spot for kids growing up in the inner city. When both of your parents are working and you're back at home, you need something to do after school. After school programs are really, really, really important for kids that come from families where both of the parents are out working, and or if maybe they only have one parent. Like me and my brother, we just showed up at St. Mary's Park and we would just play sports. We'd just hang out with whoever was there. Nowadays, to your point of profitizing it, you know, the gyms aren't open unless you have a permit, unless someone is paid for it. They would rather rent it out to Twitter. They would rather rent it out to Google twice a week because they're going to pay premiums. And all of us 12 to 15 year old kids, we're not paying for a darn thing. And so to your point, it's really sad. And then on baseball, I mean, I posted a picture the other day that I played for St. Mary's Park. I was one of three white kids on a team of 17, 18 boys on this team. It was all African-American boys, all Mexican-American. We had some Salvadorian, Nicaraguan players on the team. And that's, again, because of St. Mary's Park just taking in everybody who lived in the neighborhood, we all played baseball. We all played strikeouts. Go around the city. Damon, you drive around. Do you see kids just hanging out at parks playing strikeouts like we did when we were coming up? No, because if you don't have a permit, you got to get off the field. It's ridiculous.
The only aspect of any park I ever see like routinely busy is the little rinky-dink section that they have for babies and toddlers, like where the swing set and the playpen and yes, the teeter-totter yes. are. There's that. And then if the park has a skate park, skateboarders have gone to the one place where they can, you know, grind their rails or whatever kids are doing these days. However, Christian Slater's gleaming the cube in 2020, they're there in their skate park. And that's the busy part of the park. Otherwise, it feels like the fields are empty or reserved for games that aren't even happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. And here's my question. So let's say you do spend $3,000 on your kid's travel team. How are they traveling? Only first class? Where are they eating? Only white tablecloth restaurants? And where are they staying? Nothing but the Ritz? I just don't understand why it would cost that much money. That would be that expensive. To go, okay, so baseball, you got to have a glove, you got to have a bat, you got to have the uniform, you got to have
your own helmet.
You got to have your own helmet in some instances. Yeah, like no, there is accoutrement that adds up. Soccer, you need shin guards, shorts, and a ball. That's it. How does it cost $3,500 to have a traveling youth soccer club, even if they're all little Ronaldinhos running around? I don't understand. Marcus Simeon is here with us. We'll get back to this, but Marcus Simeon, well, he grew up in the Bay. He grew up playing local Little League baseball as well, and he was pretty good at it, and look at what he has done. We are very happy to welcome here Damon Ratto and Joe Shasky this afternoon. Marcus Simeon of the Oakland A's, shortstop, had a monster year last year. Marcus, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well. You jumped in and called in right when we were in the middle of a conversation about youth sports. You know, Ian Desmond's Instagram post the other day didn't just take a flamethrower to Major League Baseball, but talked about how at the youth level there was a problem. And, you know, you are a product of Bay Area youth sports. When you look at it now, how much different is it than when you were a kid?
Well, yeah, I think what Ian said is exactly right. And I think he grew up in Florida, but growing up here in the Bay Area, when I was, you know, young, it was youth baseball, whether it be Little League or Pony. I played Pony baseball in El Cerrito. And once you get to about 12 or 13, then these kids are faced with the decision. Do I play Pony ball, which is 13, 14, which is decent competition, or do I play travel ball, which is the best competition? And that's going to cost you a lot of money. So that's where it's always been a problem. It's just now the prices for that travel ball have tripled since I was younger.
It's really something else. There's no doubt. Go ahead, Ray. We'll get to Major League Baseball in a second here, but this is interesting.
The fact that technically this falls outside Major League Baseball's purview. Do you get the sense that MLB is just throwing up their hands about this part of the baseball problem, or does this require that maybe Major League Baseball start sponsoring leagues across the country so that it's not a price point? You don't have to come up with $3,500 before practice one. Is there a sense that you have that anybody other than individual players are trying to make this better?
Well, it's complicated because there's so many kids out there, and you know, of course, I'm sure MLB wants to help. It's just logistically trying to figure out the most, I guess, efficient way to do it. And I think that it would be up to the ball clubs in the area. And that, you know, there's most, you know, we have two teams in here in the Bay Area. They do, you know, they do a great job in the community, but when you look at specifically competitive baseball for young kids, and you know, you look at the fields we may have, you know, in the city of Oakland, there's not enough facilities, I think. And even in El Cerrito, Richmond, it takes a village. I think it takes more coaching, better coaching, whether that's MLB or the Oakland A's having a coaching clinic, or you know, you have to start from the ground up. So it's not as easy as just throwing money at a community or a baseball program or initiative. It starts with the coaches and, from the ground up, I think.
Marcus Semien of the Oakland A's joining us here on 95.7 The Game. So you guys officially report for your first workout on Saturday. How are you preparing for this? What have you been doing in the oddest, longest spring training of all time?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, I set up a weight room in my garage. The A's were nice enough to let me borrow some of the weights and stuff, so I did that. And I've been hitting, driving out to Livermore and San Ramon to hit, because I have some buddies who have some cages for me. Places that may not have been open to the public, but they were nice enough to let me hit. And then just, you know, throwing as much as I can. Some of the pitchers have come into town early since, you know, I'm the only one who lives in the area. Piscotty lives in Danville. I live here closer to Oakland. So, just playing catch at a local park, and it's been fun to see, like, young kids come around and notice us and say hi to us, and they get to watch some big leaguers play catch.
That is cool.
Is there a have you gotten a sense from other players about how comfortable they are health-wise about resuming this under the plan they've got? Or are you starting to look at some places where the virus is spiking and starting to wonder if anybody can make this work safely?
Yeah, I think guys, for the most part, our A's team has been pretty healthy. I mean, we'll find out here in a couple of days when we do our intake testing, what's the state of the team. But for the most part, everybody's been healthy and following the CDC guidelines, and that's what we're going to have to continue to do to keep this thing rolling. And when I say following the CDC guidelines, I mean off the field. You kind of have to be extra cautious when we leave the ballpark, because all the protocols seem pretty safe in the ballpark. The testing, you know, we're hoping to get results as quick as we can, just so we know, you know, if we're taking a test every day or every other day, you want to get the results ASAP so you know that you're safe. But either way, we're wearing masks in the clubhouse. When you play the game of baseball, there's rules now of no licking your fingers, no spitting, no chewing seeds, stuff that, you know, usually germs can be flying in the air because of. So I think it'll be safe, but there's always going to be that risk.
Are you a seeds guy, Marcus? You going to have trouble with the seeds protocol?
I'm a gum guy. I think there's no rule against gum. I'll just have to throw it in the trash and be courteous, but whenever
no
I don't have
no gum, blowing bubbles, no blowing bubbles.
Yeah,
no. That...
yeah, we'll see how they enforce that. But you know, some of the stuff you just you're so used to doing. And for me, I've been playing pro ball for, you know, 9-10 years. There's just bad habits that, you know, during this time you're going to have to break. And I'm willing to do it. I think all of us are willing to do our part. We all want to compete for a World Series and earn salary. So that's what we're going to have to do.
Yeah, I want to go back to the question I had a minute ago. I wasn't really talking about whether the A's as players were minding protocol. I was talking more about sort of the states around everybody, like Florida, like Arizona, like Texas, like Georgia, well, like California. The question I have is, are players comfortable that the states in which they will be playing and traveling to and from are going to be able to keep you safe no matter how hard you try to remain safe?
Yeah, that's going to be something we're going to have to keep a close eye on in the next 3 to 4 weeks, because right now, I think right now it's a little scary because everybody's traveling into the home cities, and the virus is surging in, you know, you look at California, Arizona, Florida, Texas. I'm sure there's more states that are struggling right now, but in, you know, it seemed like it was about 3 months ago that it was the California, the New York, and the highly populated areas. But you're seeing some states where, you know, more rural states. But either way, the states that we're playing in, I hope that the curve flattens in those areas once our season starts, when we do start traveling in. But in terms of home cities, you know, some teams are more vulnerable than others right now.
Marcus Semien of the Oakland A's, when you see a 60-game schedule laying before you, obviously a fast start would be great. A slow start could be fatal. For a team like the A's, an incredibly interesting mixture of young and even younger talent, does a 60-game sprint benefit you, hurt you? How do you think you guys stack up against such an odd schedule?
Well, we've got a tough division. We've got two of the top teams in the league with the Dodgers and Astros. And I'd like to put us up there. There's also some teams that are pretty scary. Look at Texas's new rotation. Look at the Angels' new lineup. Even Arizona, I think they've got a good team too. You know, it's going to be competitive, and you're probably going to see some teams get hot that you wouldn't expect to be in the race. You know, but we've had some great stretches of 60 games, yeah, and they were, you know, around this time of the calendar year. No matter, you know, how long the season is, we know that we have the pitching now to compete. You know, the last two seasons we've won 97 games, we've had slow starts because we, you know, we didn't necessarily put the best rotation out there that we could have. You know, we had some younger guys, you know, we ended up having to go get pitching at the deadline. And I feel like we have the staff now that, you know, we've had in the second half of the last 2 years.
The last couple of years you have had your burst in the second half. And I presume your feeling and your team's feeling is that it's really the time of year when you show your best rather than the number on the schedule. But In a situation where everybody has to start fast or get buried, does that make those early games more pressurized? Because while you can't get into the playoffs at the start, you can get knocked out of the playoffs at the start.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think it was last spring, maybe 2019 spring training, we had Ricky Henderson and Dave Stewart speak in front of our team. These guys won a world championship with Oakland, and their message to us was that these games in April mean just as much as the games in September. So just listening to them, obviously we got out to a slow start. We still got out to a slow start, but these guys are exactly right. And I think that winning early builds confidence. You know, we started winning in, you know, June, July, the last 2 years, and we got that confidence, and we were unstoppable in August and September. So we're just trying to build off of last year. I know this pandemic, you know, took a little bit of momentum away from us, but it'd be nice to get back out there on the field and scrimmage against each other and face some live pitching, and hopefully the transition is smooth.
Born in San Francisco, raised in the East Bay, played college ball at Cal. Marcus Semien, a shortstop, here with us on 95.7 The Game. Monster year for you. I mean, career high everywhere you look, every category that matters, brought you to third place finish in MVP voting. Congratulations. How do you pick up where you left off? And were you doing anything that you thought different last year? Or did, as they say, the game finally come to you?
Well, there were some adjustments I made, you know, in 2019 spring. Just try to get into my legs a little bit more in my batting stance. So a little bit lower crouch. If you look at my batting stance over the last 6 years, you can see the evolution. And I think I found something that works for me right now. I switched to a half an inch shorter bat, something I could handle a little bit better. And I really revamped my entire routine in the cage and in the video room. So just utilizing some of the data that we have available to us and knowing how to process it and use it in the game. It's to where before I just go out there and try and figure it out. And what I realize is these pitchers in the major leagues are too good to just go in there and, you know, get a feel for it. You almost have to know them like the back of your hand before the game starts just to have a fighting chance. So,
or at least have someone banging a trash can, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So that's when you hear, you know, that stuff that went on, it makes people really mad because, you know, for me, I work extremely hard to, you know, do my homework, you know, research what this guy's percentages are in every count even. There's so much data out there that you just need to sift through. Then when you get out there in the game, you know what you're facing. So I really learned how to do that stuff, and I'm looking forward to continuing that that process this year.
With every season being a matter of you adjusting to pitchers adjusting to you, the shortened season probably means that those adjustments have to come quicker. Does the fact that you've been in the game for several years now and had a breakout year last year make you think that your ability to adjust to pitchers is that much more acute so that your adjustment time to whatever they decide to do to you is going to be shorter now than it would have been even as recently as last year?
Yeah, I think over the past 5 years with Oakland, definitely being an everyday guy, you start to get – you start to understand the scouting report on yourself, that the league is going to pretty much follow the same scouting report. Maybe some teams have their philosophies that they stick to, so you have to be able to decipher those. But either way, you still got to go out there and play ball. And for me, I just try and keep it simple, use all the information I have, but still work to my strengths as well. You don't want to rely so much on all that information and data that you forget to do what you've been working on all offseason and all pandemic, which is focusing on shrinking the zone and putting a good swing on the ball. So that those things are most important first.
I tell you, if the best ability is availability, man, that was among your greatest abilities last year. You missed only one game, and hopefully your health continues to and through this entire season. I got one kind of house cleaning question for you, because you play next to Matt Olson. How much different did that make your defensive responsibilities and comfortable? How much more comfortable did you get with a guy like Chapman next to you?
Yeah, Chapman's the best third baseman I've ever seen. So,
what'd I call him? Olson? I meant Chapman. Did I say Chapman?
No,
I think I said both.
You covered your – yeah, you got every mat in the roster.
First base and third base. How's that looking, Mark?
No, I knew what you meant. I think Chappie, when I say he's the best third baseman I've ever seen, I mean he has the best range, he has the best arm, he has the best glove work. Those are the three things you need. So he covers some ground over there, but I think we've worked together with our positioning to where I can shade up the middle a little bit more and take some hits away up the middle, and you can't beat him either way. So we've got the six hole covered. I'm looking forward to this year. And you did mention Matt Olson. he's the best first baseman in the game. So he can pick it. He can reach for anything. He can jump. He can, you know, make plays on his side. He's got a quick transfer on the double play. So, you know, it's been fun playing with those guys. Those guys are, you know, the two best in the game on the corner.
This has been a great conversation. We thank you for your time. I know your season begins with spring training 2.0 on Saturday over in Oakland. So much of the conversation we've had in the world has been about a pandemic, and so much of the conversation that we've had has been about race relations. Again, we've already mentioned Ian Desmond. We're going to have Doug Glanville on a little bit later. He had an incredible story on ESPN about what comes after the comma, as he's being described. There's been an awful lot of talk about a lack of diversity in Major League, not just dugouts, but clubhouses and obviously in executive offices. What can be done to improve black presences in the most important corners of baseball, in your mind?
Well, I think that it goes back to the conversation we had before, talking about what Ian Desmond was talking about. It starts at the youth level. I mean, I don't know that many Major League Baseball players who started playing baseball much later than age 10. I mean, that there's a rare, you know, there's a low amount of guys who started in like high school or something. So starts at a young age. I'm already throwing to my sons. They're 3 years old and 2 years old, and it's like, and they love it. So seems like most of the African American kids around the Bay Area like to play basketball or football more than baseball, and I think that's where we're gonna have to start, is to teach some of these kids the game at a younger age, because, you know, it's a skill-oriented game, but when you put a great athlete, put a bat in his hand, and you never know, you know, how electric he might be. And that's, you know, as a young kid, I'm glad my mom put the bat in my hand and, you know, gave me the opportunity to play, drove me to every game, put me around, you know, people who helped me and taught me the right way. So it takes a village.
Did you ever have your three-year-old barrel you up, and did you brush him back on the next pitch?
Actually, yeah, he comes and hits with me. I told you I was driving out to Livermore and Terramon. He's with me, so he gets his hacks. I'm already behind an L screen because he can hit a comebacker and get me. So he loves it. So it's been a blast. At least during the pandemic, you know, we're not able to earn any salary, but you get to spend as much time with your, you know, the most time you've ever spent with your family in the summer. So it's been nice.
Marcus, thanks for ending on such a positive note, man. We really appreciated this. This is an awesome conversation. Good luck to you and all of your teammates starting this Saturday. Thank you so much.
Hey, see you later.
Marcus Semien of the Oakland A's. Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff from a guy who is he's been around this game for a long time, man. I mean, remember, Ray, when he couldn't field? You know, oh, where are you going to play him? He's half a shortstop. You can't have half a shortstop. And he really, I think Ron Washington worked him out, and he learned how to pick it, and he turned into a really good defensive shortstop. Not great, but good enough to be in an MVP conversation.
Ron Washington did a lot for him, but the other thing that happened was that he had really good range, but he would go after balls that, frankly, you probably couldn't make a play on. And until he got Chapman at third, and he could have confidence that he didn't have to run 40 yards to either side to make a play, that helped him too. And I think it's helped Chapman as well, because Chapman's ability to go into the hole to get a ball, you know, makes Semien's travel that much less, and Semien's ability to go that way makes Chapman's job that much easier. And the fascinating thing that happened with Semien more than anything else was that he didn't let the early years get to him, because baseball is the most mental of games, where you sort of have to live in your own head a lot. And he did struggle early, and he struggled a lot. And he basically said, I'm not going to get beaten by this. So it was a combination of him not giving in, Ron Washington seeing that there were things to work with, and the fact that Chapman made his job easier, and he Chapman's.
for those of you who think that Butcher Boy is just waiting to do interviews with San Francisco Giants, that's not it at all. Is Butcher back? Do we have him? Not yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there it is.
I'm in and out all day. It's crazy. But you're forgetting one element, Ray, and that's Matt Olson at first base. They're starting to track digouts as a statistic, and Matt Olson led Major League Baseball in terms of digouts, the percentage of balls that he scoops up out of the dirt. And him being over at first base has reduced significantly the amount of throwing errors Simeon's had, as well as Matt Chapman. But Matt Olson might be the most underrated first baseman defensively in baseball, and I think that's another element of why Simeon started to play a lot better.
Gold gloves everywhere, right? I mean, it makes everyone look better defensively.
Except second.
Well, we'll worry about that a little bit later on, I guess. what do you think JT Snow would have done in the National League in terms of leading it in digouts, right?
Oh, man, he would have been awesome. Oh. JT. Woo!
The one advantage, though, that Olson has that Snow didn't is that Olson's taller, so he can get up for more balls, and he could stretch further in any direction. Digouts, in terms of, like, balls in the dirt, they're probably equivalent, but Olson has that advantage of being a bigger guy.
Well, and he's right-handed as opposed to JT being left-handed defensively. So there's a little subtleties there. JT's range, though, at first base, we talked about, you know, those old spacious ballparks. JT would get everything in those big foul territory areas. And that's the one thing that the A's have that not a lot of the other teams in baseball have, which is that spacious foul territory area because they have one of the last dual-purpose stadiums.
Is it a dual-purpose stadium anymore? I don't even know if there's
dual-purpose.
Yeah,
that second purpose has vanished. It just has a massive foul ground.
Yeah,
let me tell you. You know, obviously, our station's relationship with the Oakland A's is, let's check the relationship box of complicated in the Facebook scale. I hope we can continue to forge that relationship with Simeon because that was one of the better, more interesting, thoughtful interviews that we've done in a while. That was great. We really appreciate Marcus Simeon joining us today. A lot of nice reaction, too, on the text line, and the text line pretty much hates everything. So if the text line likes anything just a little, that means it was pretty darn good. And we really appreciate Marcus Simeon joining us here. If you missed that, we got to jog that back for you a little bit later on. I'm sure that we will. Still much more coming up. Doug Glanville is officially TBD. We are trying to get him on. We were trying yesterday. We're going to try back again today. We've got a What If Wednesday starting in earnest at 5 o'clock. And we got some questions around sports being asked by, oh, what do you know, the pandemic itself. We're going to come on back with much more in just a moment. Hopefully get a couple internet connections sped up. I don't know what horsepower your guys is. Dial-up modems are or what the deal is. Or we're using payphones for dial-up modems. We will forge ahead. And we got open phone lines, too. We're going to get back into local youth sports. We got an awful lot this afternoon. And you got to use the facts in front of you. So we will put some facts that are indisputable in front of you next hour as well. Don't go anywhere. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with Butcher Boy hanging out as long as his internet connection will allow him this afternoon. On 95.7 The Game, and we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.